DeKoning firing one in again for her second goal of the game. That was beautiful. That was very Greta-esque, if I could say so myself, Amit.
Excellent shot by DeKoning, and I think she's making some fans out here at Rulo.
Greta Nock with it. Greta Nock shoots and scores. Near post. Bayless didn't leave her much, but Greta Nock can do it. And she puts the Blue Hens up 5-3.
When you need a goal, you go to Greta Nock.
Catch more action from the defending national champion Delaware field hockey team right here on 91.3 WVUD. Check out our broadcast schedule at WVUD.org and on Twitter at WVUD Sports.
You're listening to the Blue Hen Sports Cage podcast. Blue Hen Sports Cage on 91.3 WVUD with Teddy Gelman.
I feel like I need to stand up in studio here and kind of experiment with how that would work.
Brandon Halvek.
Their whole defensive line has been arrested once or twice over the past 2 years.
Ahmed Quadri.
Yankees are fun to watch, end quote. That's it. That's all I ever said.
And Jake Lampert.
Eat more chicken. There you go. I'll throw a slogan in there. If anyone here is working for Chick-fil-A and wants to throw me some sandwiches.
It's Sports Talk Radio on 91.3 WVUD. Welcome to the cage.
We'll talk about college football. The new poll came out this week, and there are a couple changes at the top. 1-5, Alabama, Oklahoma, Clemson, USC, and Penn State. Maybe one of the biggest wins, Oklahoma over Ohio State. Number 5, Oklahoma, beating number 2, Ohio State, 31-16. And Jake, you touched on this moments ago with Baker Mayfield after the game.
Yeah, so Oklahoma beat Ohio State 31-16 at Ohio State. It was pretty much Ohio State's game until the third. It was almost as if the tables just literally did a total 180 here, with Baker Mayfield leading a heck of a charge to try and get Oklahoma back into it. A week ago, the game Oklahoma played, Baker Mayfield was 19 for 20 and threw for 329 yards. Against Ohio State, he threw for 386 yards and 3 touchdowns, piling on the yards specifically in the second half, as Ohio State's line literally became nothing, and Baker Mayfield could do whatever he wanted. That puts Baker Mayfield at number one in the Heisman watch. I know we'll probably touch on that at least one more time in this segment, but Baker Mayfield is 49 in first-place votes. Next up is Lamar Jackson with 45.
Yeah, and we talked about this in the pre-show meeting. I was still on high on the Lamar Jackson train, and he's still my number one pick, but I think that game coming up with Clemson is really going to tell a lot of stories here and really clarify a lot of things still early on in this college football season. But yeah, that Baker Mayfield story that you briefly went over, Jake, that was amazing. And for Oklahoma to make a huge jump like they did, I know they're at 2, you know, from 5-2, but that is an enormous jump, and they have really put themselves to stick around in the top four and hopefully make a run at the college football playoffs.
A couple other top teams that beat other ranked teams this week. Number 3 Clemson beat number 13 Auburn. That was 14-6. Clemson now 2-0, a big home win for them. And Southern California, USC number 6, beat Stanford number 14. A lot of people wondered. I saw some discussion on Twitter and Facebook online chats this week why a team such as Penn State, that was 4 last week and took care of business this week against Pitt, got moved down to 5. And the reason is because USC beat a ranked team by 18 points, and so USC, by nature, is going to pass them. But really no major upsets this week. Between these games that we've talked about here, the Oklahoma, Clemson, USC, I want to make sure I'm not missing any of these. Oklahoma, Clemson, USC, also Georgia, they moved up to number 13 at the time being. They took care of business last week against the Notre Dame Fighting Irish. among those ranked teams that beat other ranked teams, which was most impressive to you guys last week?
I'm definitely going to go with Oklahoma. You get to see Baker Mayfield, number one in Heisman voting, in true Heisman form, putting up almost 400 yards against Ohio, at the time ranked number two. I think that was the most impressive game out of the lot that we talked about, but I think next week is going to pack a lot more impressive games, and I'm sure we'll get to those a little later in the show.
USC-Stanford for me, that was... Stanford's always going to be a competitive team, and USC with Sam Darnold really coming in to being just a grown man athlete. I think he's not fully at the top two discussion yet for Heisman, but he will be there at the end. And if UFC just takes care of their business moving forward, they'll also definitely be there towards the end. They have had a long journey in the last four, five, 6 years, and they are finally here. Again, Penn State also, crazy to think that these two teams were in the Rose Bowl. I believe they were 5-6 last year, and that was one heck of a matchup. So these two teams moving forward are the two teams we should really be looking at moving forward. But USC, very impressive victory over at 14 Stanford.
We're talking about the ranked teams, so we really shouldn't ignore Virginia Tech, and I want to give them a moment obviously the Blue Hens played them. The Hokies are 2-0, and they'll face number 3 Clemson in a couple weeks. That's going to be a good game. Until then, they have East Carolina and Old Dominion. What's the ceiling for this Hokies team?
Well, they should win both of those next two matchups. East Carolina actually lost to James Madison, who is at Delaware's level and in Delaware's conference, the CAA. The biggest test is the Clemson game, and I think before then they really need to figure out their running game. Give credit to Delaware, but 81 rushing yards won't get it done against Clemson, especially when you need the threat of that inside run to free up Josh Jackson around the edge on the read option. I think the passing game was good enough, and the defense was solid, but those next two games are big for them to figure out the running game, because that's going to give them an advantage in terms of time of possession and give them a chance against the Clemson Tigers team if they have that attack.
And also, remember that they play in the ACC Coastal, which they're the best team in, on paper. So, assuming they take care of business, they could very well have a rematch against Clemson in the ACC Championship.
Because, correct me if I'm wrong, Florida State and Clemson are on the same side.
And Louisville,
so
who's pretty good, too.
Consistently beat up on each other, and then that often leaves Virginia Tech there to be in that championship game. And if you get to that game at the end of the season, a war of attrition through the year, if you're the healthier team, like, anything can happen when you face the Clemson Tigers. They don't have Deshaun Watson this year. They're still number 3 in the nation right now, but the Hokies are 16, and if they keep winning these next 2 weeks, other teams are going to lose. They'll keep moving up. They could be close to the top 10 when they face Clemson.
Like we said last week, it was the highest-ranked opponent that the Blue Hens faced, and they were no pushover, so the Blue Hens did come out with the fight, as we mentioned before. There are a couple good games this weekend. I was surprised, Jake, when you said there's a great slate. There's only a couple ranked versus ranked this week.
Better than it was this week, I think.
We have 17 Miami versus 11 Florida State, 23 Tennessee versus...
But even that, no DeAndre Francois, so just going back to that Florida State game, how good is that?
Where are they falling now? Where are they going? And then 23 Tennessee versus 23 Florida, and 3 Clemson versus 14 Louisville. I mean, that's your ACC battle right there.
Yeah, that's the best game of the week, in my opinion. If Lamar Jackson plays to Heisman Lamar Jackson standards, they have a chance. He's been better inside the pocket this year. His completion percentage is 69% this year within the pocket. Last year was 60%. That was a major area where I think he needed to improve. We know what he can do with his legs. I think that they do have a good chance against Clemson in this game this week.
I think I'm going to agree with that. We've seen what he can do in the open field. It's pretty scary. One of the best quarterbacks. He won the Heisman last year for a reason. I think that Clemson is not going to be able to contain him. I think they just need to slow him down if they want to have any competition.
They have some really good wide receivers as well. Louisville does that in the ACC that people don't talk about. But you talk about a one-man show and trying to single-handedly lead your team. That's Lamar Jackson. And they're obviously not going to swap positions here if they win, but hopefully they can get to a top 10. I really want to see this team make a run at the top 4 and really make that next leap.
Last year's Louisville-Clemson game, I think, was one of the best games of the regular season. So if this game's
unfortunate how it
close,
ended, but yeah.
Yeah, but if this game's anywhere close, it's going to be exciting. There's going to be a lot of scoring.
You're listening to Blue Hen Sports Cage on 91.3 WVUD, the voice of the University of Delaware.
We're going to get to baseball. We've got a big game tonight. It's a regular game in terms of what it is on the schedule, but it could be historical, and we'll get to that a little bit later on. Before we talk about the Indians, though, news out of baseball coming last week. The Washington Nationals were the first team to clinch a postseason spot, and very quickly now, other MLB teams are there, and we'll preview the playoffs in these next couple weeks because we're getting there very quickly. We'll talk about wild card. Let's jump to the Dodgers first in the National League. They lost 11 in a row. It appeared to be a panic out there in L.A. The team could not buy a win. Clayton Kershaw was out after four innings or something like that in his last start. They finally get a couple wins against the Giants. They've got a couple under their belt. Before this happened, because when we made this run, when we made the rundown for the show, this team was still losing. In the moment of peak losing for the Los Angeles Dodgers, how worried do you believe the Dodgers fans were?
I don't think they were shaking in their boots for any purpose. I think that it was they were so ahead at that point, right in the middle of that losing streak, that it was almost like, oh, this loss doesn't matter, this loss doesn't matter. But after I think that middle point, after we started to get a little ahead of that middle point and starting to see, like, all right, they're still losing, I think they got a little nervous. Also combined with the Arizona Diamondbacks coming out of nowhere and making this maybe a division that can compete for number one. I don't want to go that far, but it might be a division to compete for number one.
I don't think you get worried about the playoffs or that sort of thing, but it could be deflating and because you looked at this team as somebody who could, a team that could maybe have 110 wins. People are talking about this as a historically great team, and they come crashing back down to earth. I think in the second half, you could expect some regression to the mean. They weren't going to have as good a second half as they had a first half because they were just so dominant. They went a stretch, I think, from the beginning of June to this losing streak where they didn't lose a series over the course of most of the summer. So you get kind of deflated as a Dodgers fan, I would think, seeing the losing streak, but it's also nice to know you can fall back on that big divisional margin, and you hope within these next few weeks you kind of just prepare the troops for the playoffs.
I still don't think, I agree with you, Jake, that they were shaking in their boots to say, because even at the very most, they were never under nine games, you know, or above nine games on the Diamondbacks, and that's still a pretty comfortable lead there. But again, it doesn't mean much to lose 11 or to win two in a row right now for the Dodgers. They had two pretty impressive victories against the Giants, so I think they're back on track. But yeah, anytime you're in mid-September and you're in the midst of a losing streak, it is a little concerning. But I think the Dodgers are fine, and they're well on their way to 100 wins.
I will say, though, in a chance for me to bring in my fandom for a second, as a Nationals fan, I'm sitting here salivating because, to me, you could say, okay, they lost 11 in a row. This team was going to win the division anyways. But you don't just lose 11 in a row by coincidence. There's got to be something wrong with you. So for a team that was far and away the best team in baseball to lose 11 in a row, I think Dodgers fans were worried, and I think they still are worried, because I'm looking around right now, and the NL Central continues to be exactly what it was the entire season, basically mediocrity, with the Cubs probably going to take it, but if they lose a couple, the Brewers and the Cardinals are right on their heels, and in the NL East, quietly, even without players most of the season, Bryce Harper is still out now, the Nationals continue to take care of business, but it still looks like the Dodgers are going to get the number one seed.
Right.
And if you're the number one seed and the D-backs take care of business against the Rockies in the wild card game, if I'm a Dodgers fan, I do not want to face the Diamondbacks. That is a hot team right now.
I agree.
Let's talk about the wild card race in the NL real quick. The Rockies are there along with the D-backs. There's a possibility that it could go to somebody else, but at this point it's looking very clear that those would be the two teams. Three games up, the Rockies are on the Brewers and the Cardinals. With that in mind, and then with the NL Central in mind, is there any chance that a team that does not win the NL Central can also pick up the second wild card spot?
I think there's absolutely a chance. It's three games back. There's definitely a chance. It won't be easy. The Rockies are 8-2 in their last 10 games. I'd be interested to see how many games they have left this season at home, because that's a team that historically has been better at home than they are on the road. The odds are definitely in the Rockies' favor to hold on to that lead, but you never know what can happen towards the last few days of the season. We've seen crazier things happen.
I mean, just going the analytical route here, Arizona and Colorado are Arizona's 99.9% to make the playoffs with the wild card. Colorado is 84% to make the playoffs with the wild card. Below them, St. Louis is 7% to make the playoffs as a wild card. But they actually have a 20% chance to even win the division. So I think St. Louis, I guess that's going to be their way in, because it looks like Arizona's too high. And if Arizona happens to overtake the division, you're gonna fall and you're going to have the Dodgers there. But I don't really think there's too many past the likes of, like, Milwaukee or Miami, but I think it'll be a 3-4 team shuffle.
Well, to be totally honest, I have a hard time believing that the Cubs are not going to win the division, just because there's been months and months and months of saying, well, maybe they'll get passed by somebody. And here we are 2-3 weeks. There's still a legit chance, and not even going with the statistics, they could lose 3 games, and the Cardinals could win 3 games in a row, and that's it. But nothing has showed me that that's going to happen so far. That division, it looks very clear to me that they're going to have their work cut out for them, whoever wins that, against the number 2 team. Even if the Nats happen to sweep this weekend series in D.C. against the Dodgers, and somehow the Nats catch the Dodgers, which they still could. I think it's 4 or 5 games. They still could. You just have a hard time believing on paper that anybody in the Central is going to get out of the first round.
I don't know if I'd go that far, because the first round's a 5-game series.
I'll give you that.
And you have Jake Arrieta, John Lester, big-name pitchers that have pitched in big spots. And it only takes a handful of, you know, it only takes those 3 wins to get things done. In baseball, the best team doesn't necessarily win if they come into the playoffs with some momentum. The Cubs would have, in my opinion, a decent shot at the Nationals. I'd still favor the Nationals, but I wouldn't put a padlock on that series and call it over before it starts.
No, I think I'm going to agree with everything you say there. I think a 5-game series is better for some teams and a lot worse for others. I think the teams that can, like you said, stretch a rotation out over 3-4 games, I think, are definitely going to be an upper hand there. But I think teams like the Dodgers, not that the Dodgers can't stretch a rotation, but that are so reliant on that 1 and 2, that maybe a 5-game series doesn't sit as well with them as other teams.
Right. I agree.
I didn't mention before, but the Dodgers, they must have done this yesterday or the day before, over the last couple of days when they won, but they did clinch officially a playoff berth, and I imagine now their magic number for the division is probably
very low, yeah.
1 or 2 at yeah. this point, because they have a 10-game lead in the division with only about 2.5 weeks left in the season. On to the American League. We'd be doing everybody a disservice to not start with the Cleveland Indians. The win streak is at 21. Their run differential is now up to 222, which the Dodgers, for a long time, had by far the best run differential. Now the Indians are about 50 runs up in that differential compared to Los Angeles.
Wow.
What is the most impressive thing about this Indian team? Indians team right
Windians
now.
Team.
Windians
they
team.
They have changed their Twitter name. They are now, if you look on Twitter and search the Cleveland Indians, their Twitter name is 21 or 22 W's in a row.
They're gonna run out of characters.
Yeah,
too.
And then their new hashtag is 20 something W's.
They're still better
Indians
than Saxonville. Come on now.
Yeah, but more basically on the team. I think while it is very tempting to just give the crown to the hitting, their hitting is, like I said, the run differential, I'm going to give it to Corey Kluber. I think Corey Kluber's been kind of scary for anyone. Now, you don't even have to be playing against Corey Kluber to be scared of him. They've racked up a crazy amount of wins, I believe. And there's another pitcher on that roster who has had 3 shutout wins. I think that's the first time in Indians history that's happened. Their pitching has stepped up. Yes, Lindor has had, I think, 10 home runs in this streak, but I am going to have to give it to Corey Kluber.
I'll go with Lindor. I do love Corey Kluber. I think he's overpassed Chris Sale for the AL Cy Young, which is not an easy thing to do, because a few months ago, Chris Sale was by far the favorite in the American League, and we talked about him winning the MVP. Lindor, I was amazed to see the other day that he has 30 home runs on the season. He kind of started the year slow, a down year last year after a really, really strong rookie season. He is the catalyst, the man in the middle of this offense. I think the attention for this team will go to the pitching, and they have dominant pitching that gives them a chance in any playoff series. But I've been very impressed with Francisco Lindor, Jason Kipnis, those guys in the middle.
And I'm not going to try to take away for anything the Indians have done here, but with all these groundbreaking statistics, there's been a lot of articles floating around. The Cleveland Indians are the 3rd worst attendance in any 21-game span.
Yeah, you got to get out there and support your team.
I can't imagine. They said the 20th win, there was only 22,000 fans in attendance on a stadium that holds 36,000. They have brought masses of 11,000, and they've brought masses of 10,000 during this win streak. I don't see... I mean, baseball games could be hard to get to. Everything could... There's all these variables, but...
That's Philly. You're selling out every night.
But a team that is... We knew was a competitor going on this historic tear, dominant pitching, explosive hitting. I don't see how that ballpark is not going 30,000 every single game.
Well, it is now, but you have to think that in the first week and a half when they were doing this, they would probably gradually increase. But Cleveland, we know, is not the best sports city or close to it in America. Before LeBron James, what was the Cavaliers' attendance? So, sure, the Indians, maybe that has something to do with it. When you go to the World Series, you expect to see more. But I remember about a month ago, we were sitting here saying, you know what, maybe the Royals are going to catch fire, and maybe that's the team. And now the Royals are playing 500 ball, and they're not going to make the playoffs. So a surge, an extreme surge. But you do have to think, going off of that, that it's unlikely that this attendance does not increase at this point based on what they're doing.
Well, the attendance has actually been going down the final two. So the final two games of this win streak have included about 12 and 13,000. That's not...
Better than that.
That's
yeah.
it?
Yeah, it's right here. So the final two games included walk-up crowds of just over 10,000, numbers of 12 and 13. It's not enough to ward off the attendance shamers, and then it goes in to show a few tweets about people kind of asking, where are they? Where are the fans for this win streak?
We got to fact-check what the capacity of that stadium
is. The stadium holds, I have, a capacity just above 35,000.
That's not going to cut it. They got to get going a little bit, but... If the team has anything to say about it, they look unstoppable at this point. I know I mentioned it off the top that officially it is the 1916 Giants that won 12 in a row, and then they tied, and then they won 14 in a row. So the Elias Sports Bureau has credited them with the longest win streak, but if they win tonight against the Royals, they will now pass the 1935 Cubs for having the longest win streak in modern era. So a pretty significant game tonight.
What do you guys think of that? Do you think that 26 is the all-time win streak, or would you give it to the Indians for 22?
Modern era. I think we need to stick modern era and go Indians for 22.
But even just the principle of that game being a tie, do you think that a tie stops a winning streak?
Absolutely, because it's not a win, it's not a loss either, but it's definitely not a win.
Yeah, winning a streak is the same outcome over and over again, so if you can't get a win, it should stop the streak.
Well, I guess in 1916, when they had a thunderstorm, they couldn't postpone it or something. Whatever happened in that game,
I'm clocking out at 10.
they have the longest unbeaten streak.
In soccer, that's what they used, Teddy, is the unbeaten streak.
Well, it's so unprecedented because you never have ties in baseball to begin with. So I'm sure it's not a surprise that nobody knows how to approach this.
As we get a soccer expert coming.
We have no idea how to approach this because this is an unprecedented situation. Regardless, it is certainly something that stands out. And now, let's get back to business here for a moment. With what the Indians are doing here, at this point in time, I know we love to say, oh, if the playoffs started today, but they don't. If we look 2.5 weeks, 3 weeks down the road, they are likely going to face off against the wild card team, and it continues to look like if the Yankees win that wild card game, it'll be the Yankees. Is this Indians team, is this all them heading back to the World Series, or are they going to get stiff competition from the Astros, Red Sox, and Yankees?
Well, starting today, they have run a 4-game series against the Kansas City Royals. So that's going to definitely be a series that we need to look at because at the American League Central. And then right after that...
But they're running away with the division.
Well, if the Kansas City Royals can throw a wrench and win 3 out of 4, which was very unlikely, but if that happens, we're going to have another conversation here.
The Royals are 17.5 games out of first place.
If they can wrench Cleveland and slow Cleveland down as we approach the start of this postseason, I'm not saying the Royals are going to overtake their spot, but we're going to need to start to figure out is if, because I read an article, Darren Rovell wrote it, and he was like, this whole win streak means nothing if they can't get out of the first round. So if they can't get some sort of footing trying to get, if Kansas City can slow them down, then they get the Angels right after that.
But they've won 21 games in a row.
This win streak doesn't mean a single thing if they do not get out of the first round of the playoffs.
But in these next few weeks and in this series, don't they have a stranglehold on the American League Central?
It's over.
Like, there's no, even if they lose the rest of the season, well, they won't do that, but don't they have the Central, or do you think there's a doubt that they have
it? It's 13 and a half games over the Twins. This is over.
Yeah.
This is over.
I think your concern is not the Central. I think it's not even the first round of the playoffs. I think it's the second round of the playoffs.
I think everybody is like, this whole run is going on. They have a lot of great competition. This run is not going to be anything but a little mark on the history board if they cannot get out of the first round of this playoffs.
Okay, admittedly. But you can't take away from what's... We are approaching this as a... This is an incredible stretch, sure. But based on what they're doing right now, is it appropriate to have any doubt that they won't get out of the first round? That's what I'm saying. Based on what you're seeing right now, nobody's beating them for 3 weeks in a row. Why is that a discussion? Until they lose a game, why is it even a conversation of, oh, will they get out of the first round? Right now, they're going to sweep the playoffs if they keep doing what they're doing.
Is this similar to the 73-9 Warriors?
That's where my mind went to, because I think people are so quick to just throw a historic accomplishment out the window if it's not a championship. Can't we appreciate something that's not a championship or a pennant? This is, if they win tonight, this will be, I think in all of our eyes, the best winning streak in baseball history.
Now that doesn't mean that...
And obviously they want to win in the playoffs.
That it's not a disappointment if they don't go all the way. But this is a team that went all the way to the World Series last year. They were in a bit of a rut for part of this season, and here they are now making history. They've got a city, hopefully, they're filling up 10,000, so I'm not sure if I could say that, behind them. And if they keep on their way, everybody thought it was the Astros and then it was the Red Sox. Well, here are the Indians, and they're the talk of the town right now. And while the Dodgers fall down in the NL, the Indians step up in the AL. And right now, they are by far and large the team to beat in the entire world of baseball.
I'm going to put out a slight ultimatum here for the Cleveland Indians. Their wild card is potentially going to be Minnesota, potentially going to be the Yankees. If they have Minnesota for their opponent in the American League playoffs, I don't see any doubt why that's not a win for Cleveland. I would be shocked if Cleveland doesn't steamroll that. But if they get a Yankees team who we have seen has been one of the more explosive, one of the most explosive.
Also fun to watch.
Also very fun to watch, coin that term. It's not going to be the huge win streak Cleveland Indians, I think, that we're going to be expecting and what we're watching right now.
7-10 tonight, Royals 72-73 on the season against the Indians, 90-56 on the season, going for their 22nd consecutive win. It's a big game. They're going for history.
You're listening to the Blue Hen Sports Cage podcast.
And I had the opportunity to sit down with head coach Rolf Vinder Kirchhoff. He was not too pleased with what his team did in the first game, but they were able to pick up the win. And Brandon, we saw Lotta De Koning continue to get herself on the scoreboard.
What a weekend for Lotta De Koning, and second straight weekend with 3 goals. I think she was CAA Rookie of the Week again, if I'm not mistaken. If not, she certainly deserves it. The Blue Hens with back-to-back Rookie of the Week, Femke Streen the week before. But Lotta De Koning, second on the team right now in goals with 6. Excited to hear from her in a few minutes. And a player that could really turn into the future. It's really early in the season, but maybe the future of Delaware Field Hockey.
And to go back a moment before we play this clip, this... Obviously, the defending national champion field hockey team, but they lost 4 seniors last year, so they bring in a freshman class. And what I learned yesterday is that three of the 5 incoming freshmen have seen consistent minutes for this team, and Lotta De Koning is one of them. And she is up there, I think, check me on this, Brandon, but she is 1 goal behind Greta for most goal score. She's at...
She has 6, Greta has 7.
She has 6, Greta has 7, and this is through the games they've played so far. And she has a play style, a style of play that is somewhat reminiscent of Greta. I remember in that first game Amit and I were at, she had the backhand shot, and that went in, and I said on air it was very Greta-esque because it reminded me of that. And she's had a great start to the season. Something that she told me yesterday that was very fascinating to me, she brought me through the process of how an international player ends up coming here. And I said, so how did Rolf find you? How did you first get contacted? She said, oh, he emailed me. And I said, tell me more. What did this look like? She said, so what it turns out is that she puts together a highlight reel of her play, and then she goes to an organization where the American coaches then can search international players and contact them. So I'm going to play a short clip right now, her talking about this after yesterday's practice.
I made a video of my hockey skills, and I had contact with an organization who... has videos of people who want to go to the States and play a sport. And they send it out to the various universities, and then the universities can email you. At first, you don't know like what universities there are, and you're not familiar with how the process goes, so seeking help from such an organization can really help you with the process, yeah.
I found that very fascinating because I, one, didn't know about that, and two, it makes a lot of sense because this is, to me and my naive self, thinking, oh, because Rolf van der Kerkhoff has ties to Europe, maybe that's how they got linked up, and that had nothing to do with it.
Well, I know that Rolf does go to the Netherlands.
Let me rephrase. It may have something to do with it, yeah. But it doesn't have everything to do with
right.
it.
Right. So it's not probably as simple as Rolf goes to a game and pulls somebody aside afterwards and says, you want to come to Delaware? We just won a national championship. But he probably does get some more experience meeting the players, maybe seeing them play. But that's interesting because that's been a pipeline that has given Delaware an advantage over every team in the CAA for the last 4 years, and some teams in the nation.
So here's Rolf after practice. We talked about this weekend's game, last weekend's games. He said he was somewhat disappointed in the first game. He was I said, how do you feel where your team is at right now through six games? He said, I'm pleased. I feel like we have a very strong team. He said, I haven't seen a group of freshmen come in as fit as this group of freshmen
wow.
in all of my years. So that's a big thing. And then here's what he had to say about Lata.
She can do it all. If she keeps things simple, she can do everything. And, you know, from a personal perspective, I think she could be a player for the Rookie of the Year in the conference. And I'm excited she's only a freshman and has a lot of room to grow. And she could be a great All-American caliber player. And maybe one day it's time for her to say, Greta, move over. I won the Honda as well.
We're not even a month into the season, and he's already comparing this freshman to the National Field Hockey Player of the Year. Now,
right.
unfortunately, I talked to him after I talked to her, so I couldn't then turn to her and say, so Lata, you just got compared to the
National...
To Greta Nock. What do you have to say about that? But he already sees it. And we could see it after the first game, Amid. We saw
yeah.
how she was playing, so it's not surprising.
This is also a big shout-out to Coach, too, because he knows how to scout, and he has a template of what he's really following, and that's girls that play and have that style of Greta Nock, and you said it, Teddy, she had that Greta-esque play, so I think that he's doing a good job of scouting and picking them, and again, to say what he said about these young group of girls that are just freshmen, that's, you know, not only for this year, but years moving forward, the outlook looks very good.
And I think it's interesting that when we spoke to Rolf van der Kerkhoff in May at our Arena's live show, it was only a few days after this freshman class was announced. And he basically said, they're freshmen, we're going to bring them in here, show them how we do things, but we don't really expect them to play that much. They're freshmen. And now we're seeing three of them, Femke Streen, Yosha van Wepperen, and Lotta de Koning, starting and playing significant minutes. And I wouldn't be surprised if we saw other freshmen getting in there as well. And not only playing, but playing to such a high level that the coach is comparing Lotta de Koning to, as you said, the National Player of the Year, and saying that maybe she's one of the best freshmen, and this is one of the best freshman classes we've had, considering that Greta Nock, CAA Rookie of the Year, Esme Pete, when she was a freshman, was CAA Player of the Year and Rookie of the Year. So there's elite company here, and it's a pipeline, and it's a dynasty, if you will, of players coming over from the Netherlands and being stars at Delaware. Esme Pete to Greta Nock to possibly right now Lotta de Koning, maybe it's Femke Streen, maybe it's both.
And Rolf said, you need about 3-4 weeks, including preseason, so about 6 weeks to get a feel for them. And he said they've done a phenomenal job and they've integrated themselves in. I know we don't mention Yosha van Wepperen as much with those two because she's a defenseman, but she's been very impressive back there
right.
as she's worked with Sarah Horgan and some of those Mackenzie Meyer, the veteran defenders. And so far, you look at these two weekend games, and I guess a naive fan would say, all right, we played Penn and Liberty, two unranked teams, and only beat them by one goal. But you have to remember sometimes that even if you're the defending national champion and you won six in a row, there is no way that you can consider yourself that we're going to go into these games and win by 5, 6, 7 goals every time. It just doesn't happen. And maybe these close games, that's a great learning experience, especially for some of these young players.
Right, and especially given that they have some tough tests coming up in Albany and UConn this weekend, two teams that are ranked in the national poll. unless they slipped, I think UConn's number two in that poll.
I think UConn's up to one.
Okay.
And now Penn State's at two. So we got a really good
Penn
one.
Yeah, Penn State's in a few weekends.
This is Sunday. This is Sunday.
This coming Sunday. Sorry, on the road. Yeah, but when they come back, we got the two tests. So, yeah, number two, and then you come back for two more ranked opponents in Albany and UConn.
And I'm not sure...
How about that for the...
Yeah, exactly. And I'm not sure why BlueHens.com is not showing that Albany and Connecticut are ranked. But this is a huge game on Sunday. Fortunately for the Delaware faithful and for the Delaware players, it is not in State College. It's actually halfway between State College, Pennsylvania, and Newark. So it will not be a full Penn State fan base. But this is the number six Blue Hens and the number two Penn State team. This is huge, and this is an opportunity again. It doesn't mean that you're not going to make the tournament if you lose this game, but another chance to get that experience and win a big game early on.
And I think it helps that they don't have a Friday game this week, too. So you imagine that all week in practice, the game plan, everything they're doing is built around playing the Nittany Lions on Sunday, which I think helps. Typically, they play a Friday and a Sunday game, either home and home or on the road and on the road. I think that's a factor. This Penn State team, perennial NCAA contender, they were in the tournament last year. I think they made it to the second or third round, weren't in the Blue Hens bracket. But so far with Louisville, Princeton, Penn State, and eventually UConn, the Blue Hens have really tested themselves in the regular season, which I think makes sense because with where they were last year, they're going to play those teams again at the end of the year, and it gives you a good sense of where you're at early in September.
Unfortunately, we will not be calling that game live since it's a Sunday road game and we will not be there for field hockey, but we will be following it live on Twitter. You can follow us at WVUD Sports. Is Lata Deconing the biggest surprise from our perspective at this point in the season for this team?
Yeah, I'd say so.
Yes.
Now, I just want to—I haven't really said much about field hockey, but I'll throw my two cents into here. I was looking down at her the numbers that she's put up this year. She has 13 points, 6 goals, and assist. Looking at the field hockey realm that we've talked about, for a freshman, those numbers are not something you'd expect to see right next to FR next to those numbers. So, yeah, I think she's the surprise this year.
With the exception of Greta Nock.
Right.
So, you see, and it was funny. When I said I talked to Greta, and I'm rambling here. We need to go to break. But I said to her, how is your leadership style changed at all, if it has? And she said, I told you last year that I don't care about awards, and I don't care about them even more this year. I just want to see us win. And so far they're doing it. 5-1 on the season, Sunday at 1 o'clock p.m. Delaware goes off against number 6 Penn State, and the following weekend they have a Friday game and a Sunday game.
You're listening to the Blue Hen Sports Cage podcast.
This week they come home after a 27-0 loss at the hands of the Virginia Tech Hokies. 1-1 on the season. Now the Blue Hens are. They'll be facing off against Cornell this Saturday at 3:30. We have that for you right here on WVUD, and that will be the first ever matchup between Delaware and Cornell. Cornell coming out of the Ivy League. Before we get set to preview the matchup this weekend, let's go back to last Saturday. Brandon and Jake, you two were there. I know we mentioned it briefly. Brandon, you did at least on this week's Delaware Football Roundup podcast, The Environment. So, Jake, now that we have a chance to get back in the studio and talk about it, from a fan's perspective and from a commentator's perspective, take us through the environment and what it was like to be down there in such a great difference of a stadium compared to what we see here in Delaware.
Yeah, Brandon and I got down there early, surprisingly, with the heck of a drive we had to take. And as we were sitting down, setting up the booth and everything, we looked around at the stadium, and I remember telling Brandon, like, wow, this is a really big stadium, and it just didn't look as filled as it should be. The gates opened at 1:30. 1:30 went past. 2 o'clock went past. The stadium really didn't look filled. And then about 5 minutes later, as we blink, the entire stadium is rushing with fans, students, and spectators coming in. They filled almost the entire stadium. But I do have to say, a small Blue Hens patch formed in the top right, the little nosebleed section of the stadium. So the Blue Hens did come out in full force. As far as it was, it was just a great experience to be able to, even when Brandon and I stopped talking and we just took a step back and let the game noise cover it up, it was so loud from end to end at the stadium that I almost wanted to let the crowd noise go longer and longer, but I knew we had to call the game so the people listening knew what was going on too.
And I remember in the first couple moments of that game, I was on the beach right near Rehoboth Beach for the WVUD retreat, and I'm sitting there with my headphones on listening to the game, and when that crowd noise came on, you came out of break, and I think whatever you said, Jake, it was something like, and there's the crowd roaring. You could feel the experience even in the radio call, and maybe not the game that the Blue Hens fans wanted to hear, but we'll get to it. Somewhat of a respectable performance, statistically speaking. Brandon, any other comment? I know you touched on a little bit the other day on the experience down there.
Yeah, I think Jake summed it up nicely. It was a huge stadium. The crowd is basically what we expected, if not louder than we expected, but they have a high reputation as being a tough place to play, and we saw that play out on the field. But from a fan's perspective, as someone who travels to stadiums, whether it be baseball, football, basketball, it was a pretty neat experience.
Amid 27-0, the line was 41.5 points, and I believe it rose as the game, as we got closer to the game. Delaware had opportunities to score. They had an interception in the red zone, the missed field goal. It was 17-0 for a very long time until the fourth quarter when Virginia Tech put up 10 points. Thoughts on the performance of Delaware?
Yeah, I mean, we have to give credit to the Blue Hens. They played really good defense, but you have to give more credit to Virginia Tech because they played even better defense. And you did mention the line, 27-0. I think they did a decent job of, you know, not letting the game get out of hand, not necessarily a blowout, but not a close game for that matter. And you mentioned the missed field goal. I thought that was very important. Right before the half, I believe it would have made the game 3-10. It would have made it within striking distance. So they had a few opportunities that they can only blame themselves for letting the game kind of get to where it really got. Because even you look at a big picture, you look at 27-3, it looks like a decent game. It looks like a game that may have been competitive at some point, and it doesn't completely feel like a blowout against a really good Virginia Tech team.
Now they'll come home, 1-1 on the season. Cornell, a team that they haven't faced yet. Cornell is a team that has not played a game this season. When Brandon and I did the Delaware Football Roundup podcast this week, we talked about that this is a game absolutely they have to win. Jake, how much stake should be put into this week's game coming up in a week after it, facing off against the defending FCS champion, JMU?
This game is what we talked about a few times. I know we talked about it in the NFL. I know we talked about it in actually the UD basketball segment, too, that you need to kind of have a momentum game. We talked about how Del State was almost a momentum game for Virginia Tech. Delaware had the ability to beat Del State, and then coming into it, it was almost as if Virginia Tech could, like, keep on rolling. But then you look at this game is a momentum game for JMU, that after, and if they can roll and beat Cornell, they should take that momentum that they kind of put together and be able to beat a, like Teddy said, the championship JMU team.
Now matched up on the big man, tries the three. Daly shot is good. Ryan Daly drains the three.
Daly can drop 20 and 10 on any given day.
What is his ceiling? What do we project from him? How high can this guy get?
Best player in the CAA. He's a scorer. He can rebound. He plays with hustle. He's a strong defender.
I was like, hey, Brandon, do you think he gets to the NBA? And Brandon was like, only if he's best player in the CAA.
Just to think that a couple months ago, this was a freshman who may knock down a few shots.
Catch Blue Hen Sports Cage for the latest in Delaware athletics, Thursdays 5-7 on 91.3 WVUD.